spring is here. Spring is the season of renewal, of flowering, of the ringing of bells in the hills. But, and blueberries and blackberries and all other kinds of berries that happen in the springtime, in this time of fecundity. The time when light returns, when life returns, when the plants bloom and blossom, and we're all supposed to feel terrific. Well, there's a springtime version of the Christmas blues, and that is when our seasons are out of sync with the seasons of the sun. The message of spring is that light returns and joy returns and tears dry and we do comfort each other. But to some extent, we have to sing on the spring to bring it in with active caring and love. It doesn't simply happen because the earth turns and the sun gets apparently higher on the horizon. It happens also for the seasons of our heart when we do something about it. It's a time where we're supposed to feel all of that vigor of spring, and sometimes maybe your back hurts, and maybe there are other things going on in life, and the heart has an empty and a wounded place to it. That's all part of life. The springtime is a metaphor as well as a season, offering us opportunity, but not inevitability. It is a time when we are given permission to say, as in the end of... where is Will? Faith is belief in things unseen. Where, as Will said, it is a mud, luscious time of wee! That wee is an explosive wee of joy, and it follows the mud. Not something that we as grown-ups, with all of our seriousness, think of as something that we want to go run in as children do. But all of those are elemental things. The mud, the water as well as the river being wide, are sources of mud, sources of life, sources of we in both the regular we sense and the joyous sense. Springtime is a time of renewal. Now, I'm not going to hide the ball here. I was asked to preach a renewal pledge sermon. This is it for our first-time guest. What can I tell you? It's Carme. You picked this Sunday. But it has a greater meaning, and because it's a greater metaphor. And that is, there are seasons of renewal in all of our lives and in all of our relationships. Times when we look at who we are in our work lives, at who we are within our family lives, our marital lives, our lives as parents, as children, as grandparents, and we look and we say, what are my desires? What are my duties? What are my obligations? How will I act? Will I just go along day by day, step by step, on automatic pilot? Or will I stop for a moment and consider my life and my choices and my priorities and what I really care about? It is my experience that we do better with each other in families, in relationships, in jobs, in every aspect of our lives when we take that time to think about our commitments to each other. In the case of this congregation, it's a commitment to a congregation, which means a commitment to each other and ourselves. Because we're not a charity out there, we are a cooperative to which each person has something to take and something to give. Every ceremony and ritual time when we have brought in new members, as we did, was it 2 weeks ago, we hand out plants. Sometimes those plants have thorns in them, like roses last time. Sometimes they have stickers and needles in them as the succulents and cactus. And I am very intentional about not being overly sentimental about religious community and family. Religious community and family and love are all difficult. They all take work. Every person has sharp edges and needles and thorns. Every person has hurt places and is vulnerable. And so when we are together, whether as families, at work, at church, we have to be aware of a rejection of the unrealistic and I think damaging sentimentality that often gets placed on family, on religious community, and even on the word love. All of those intimacies are great and trusting gifts with dangers and opportunities. And so there are no perfect people. There are no perfect families. There are no perfect churches. We work hard to work with each other, with our sharp places and our soft and our vulnerable places. We hand out these plants and these flowers partially for that metaphor, but also because there's a garden metaphor here. It's interesting and not at all accidental that the Bible starts out, and that's true of the Bible for Jews, for Christians, and for Muslims. All start out with the Garden of Eden, with a garden, with seeing a garden as, in a sense, the ideal, a place that is tended, a place of growth, a place of life, of fertility, of fecundity, a place connected where we are connected to nature. I think of this congregation often as a garden, as a community garden, as a community garden where we come in and we plant our seeds, we till the soil, well, we should probably till it first, then plant it, then water, then do all of the things that you do in order to make things grow together. It's, I think, a good metaphor for community, because not everybody comes in with the same package of seeds. Not everybody is going to agree on what we should grow. I'd like flowers. I'm allergic to flowers. Well, could we have this flower because it's not doesn't have too strong a scent? But I love the smell of camellias. Well, you know, with starvation in the world, maybe we should only plant really nutritionally dense plants. There's enough room in the world for flowers, for ornamentation, for different plants and shapes and sizes and scents, and for the riot of color and of diversity that we can create within a community garden. It's interesting that, again, I don't want to get too political here, but the Obamas just planted a garden at the White House. And, of course, they've always had at the White House the rose garden with its thorns, but now there's going to be a kitchen garden with vegetables, with tubers. Maybe a legume might sneak in, and there'll be things to eat. Some sense of connection that we have with that which gives us life and sustains us in life. But tending gardens isn't always easy, especially if you don't know what you're doing. I don't make up a lot of stories that I tell. They're almost all both true and factual. And one of the true and factual stories is I was sent to detention for 2 weeks, not last week, in junior high school because in gardening class they asked me to weed out the calendulas from the weeds. At the state that the calendulae were in, I made a judgment about which plant looked more like a flower. Those yellow things or the little scrubby things, and I ripped out the wrong ones. And for some reason, I don't know how the teacher could possibly have thought this, The teacher thought that I was messing with him and thought that I had done it intentionally, where I assure you, I was innocent. I was innocent of guile. I was innocent of information. And I didn't mean to do it. It channeled me back to only a couple of years earlier when I was, and you'll find this really hard to believe, Judy, I was thrown out of chorus. I was thrown out of chorus in fourth grade because they thought I was messing with them when I was singing my version of 12 Tone. And it was just an honest and principled search for a key. And unsuccessful, as it turns out. Well, both of these stories are stories of transgression. I did wrong, but I didn't mean to. That happens a lot in life. That happens a lot in gardens. That happens a lot in communities and in love. Only 2 weeks ago, I forget whose foot I was pretending to step on, in order to talk about how when we are working together on different ideas and different visions and different gifts, we are bound to run into each other. We are bound to make mistakes. There are bound to be areas of ignorance, sometimes of insensitivity, sometimes of just not knowing and just not noticing, just not understanding. It's hard to grow a garden. It takes an awful lot of skill and patience and time. Now, I don't normally tell jokes, and this isn't a joke. I sometimes see things funny and maybe say things funny. But there is an old story about an American walking through the countryside in England and passing an Englishman who is mowing his lawn. And the American says, "That's an incredible lawn that you have. That's beautiful. I wish I could get my lawn to look like that. What's the secret?" And the Englishman says, "Well, actually, there's no secret. You till the land, you sow the seeds, you roll it, you water it, and 500 years later, it looks just like this." Sometimes you just have to have the patience as we put together the garden with all of the different and important elements in it. Most of the people in this room, trying to look for the exceptions, most of the people in this room found this garden here when you arrived. We were here. Other people had done the work. Other people had secured some relationship with buildings, a Montessori school, the university women's club, then downstairs here. And over time, every gardener has contributed something and, I hope, taken away something of spiritual nourishment. Everyone's work has counted, no matter how long they have stayed, no matter how brief was their visit. We make a difference to each other. But I'm not going to get sentimental. Getting sentimental and idealistic leads to disappointment and to charges of hypocrisy. I know from my own experience in both doing funerals and memorial services and attending them that if you paint a picture of a saint, a counterfeit mask of a saint over a real human being, it's morally wrong on two levels. One, it's a lie. And the second is, nobody in the congregation will recognize the person. Who the hell's he talking about? That's not the way Fred was. Who was this person? We need to understand that we are human beings with blemishes. We are human beings with thorny places and with hurting places. And we work together in the mud, and we work together in the dry land, and we try to figure out what needs to be irrigated and what needs to be dry farmed, what needs to be trimmed back, and what needs to be let run riot. We look at some plants that shouldn't grow. I know that there are gardeners who have planted plants that should not grow in these temperatures, and they may flourish. And other seeds that were supposed to be perfect for the area, they never come up. Results may vary. This is the individuality of every human being. And yet, we do our best to be together, to work together, to go to the trouble of arguing about what should be in the garden, whether it should be all carrots and potatoes, or it should be all flowers, and what the mix should be. How should we tend and trim the vines? And just, and this is an important question for me, and just what grapes to grow on those vines, critical issues. Wouldn't it be easier for all of us to just go home and tend our own gardens? And the answer is yes, of course. I am a rock, I am an island, and a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries. Of course it's easier to go home and tend your own garden, but oh God, what we would miss by not being together, by not growing together, by not planting and tending and reaping and sharing those fruits and vegetables and legumes together while we enjoy the flowers. This is a time when we celebrate a season of renewal, thinking about what we have planted and what we plan to plant for the future. This is a time where we celebrate a legacy of what was given to us, what we have planted and grown, and what we will do in the future, and what legacy we will create for those who come after us. It is, in my view, the appreciation of from where we all come on our individual stories to the time that we share together, to the legacy that we leave for the people who come after us, that is the quintessential religious spiritual journey. It isn't so much about faith and belief as it is about planting, tending, nurturing, sharing, loving, healing, and forgiving. That is what commitment is about. That is what renewal is about. This is what we, imperfectly as all groups, aspire to growing, to caring, to loving, to embracing, to forgiving, to healing, and accepting the thorns and the soft spots in ourselves and others.